Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The U.S. faces fire and water. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Monday, September 14. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
In the West, wildfires in 12 states have now claimed at least 35 lives. In the South, Louisiana and Mississippi brace for Tropical Storm Sally.
L.A. County is searching for a man who shot and critically injured two deputies. Separately, protesters reportedly chanted for the officers' deaths.
In sports, week one of the NFL saw several teams sit out the national anthem. In tennis, Dominic Thiem won the U.S. Open in a first-ever tiebreaker.
And the different versions of outdoor classrooms during the pandemic.
I mean, they're doing anything to get the kids outside, and if you're going to have a camping structure, it kind of looks more inviting for children as opposed to just sitting on the grass. And I think a lot of schools are implementing this as a long-term plan, so that's why they're really going all out.
Elizabeth Buchwald at MarketWatch on tents, wooden bandstands, and other shelters serving as outdoor classroom space. The death toll from the wildfires in the West is now at least 35, as roughly 100 blazes rage through at least 12 states. More than 30,000 firefighters and support personnel were battling the blazes. The National Interagency Fire Center said yesterday that evacuation orders remain in effect for communities near 36 of the wildfires. No one knows yet how many homes have been destroyed, although the estimate is that thousands are gone. Oregon Governor Kate Brown was on CBS's Face the Nation.
We've got fires on the coast. We've got fires in communities right abutting our metropolitan areas. And Southern Oregon has been devastated.
Search and rescue teams were deployed across Southern Oregon towns yesterday. While smoke made it difficult to breathe, it actually helped firefighters by blocking the sun and turning the weather cooler. In Portland, the air quality index yesterday was 426. Anything between 300 and 500 is considered hazardous. The cities of Madras and Roseburg exceeded the scale. Well, the American West is facing one of the most dangerous and overwhelming fire seasons in history due to high temperatures, strong winds, dry forests, and of course, lightning storms. Why is this year so much worse? Here's Jim Carlton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Jim, what's it like from your post in the Bay Area?
Well, I live in San Francisco, Gordon, and it's really kind of apocalyptic. A couple of days ago, we had kind of a Martian orange sky. There's ash all around. There are fires. It's pretty surreal, to be quite honest. Something to definitely tell the grandkids about.
All right. Yeah. So explain some of these things that have combined to make things so bad this year.
Well, as you suggested, we really have a perfect storm of kind of negative factors creating this effect. One, we basically had a policy of not fighting fires for 100 years in the national forest. So we have this huge buildup of fuel and trees ready to burn. Two, we've had warming temperatures across the world in the West the last few decades due to climate change. That has, dried out the forest and created this tinder box, basically. Then, in mid-August, we had the last thing we needed was a gigantic lightning storm. It was from remnants of a tropical storm, and so there was 15,000 lightning strikes across Northern California, and that sparked hundreds of fires, and that's when kind of the nightmare started.
For those who say that climate change is at work here, what's the evidence they point to? What do they say is actually happening with the climate that would lead to something like these thousands of lightning strikes?
Well, I mean, for example, the lightning strikes, tropical storms rarely get this far north in the Pacific. And so this year is tropical storms Fausto and Genevieve. Remnants drifted as far north as the Bay Area. So we had the high levels of humidity and all this lightning. And it just never happens. And that's because of warmer waters in the Pacific, is what I'm told. August was a record month in temperatures in California. Los Angeles had a temperature of 121 degrees just Labor Day weekend, the highest ever recorded there. So it's been very surreal and scary.
The burning of dead brush to eliminate the fuel for these fires, that's controversial, doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the remedies is to thin these forests in the brush. And there's two ways to do it. One is you can kind of, you know, chop it down, but that's hard. It's you know, one, we've really kind of curtailed that industry in recent years due to environmental concerns. And as you suggested on prescribed burning, you know, if you're a neighbor, you just don't like the smell of the smoke. So it's kind of a NIMBY problem. You know, kind of sad because this stuff needs to be burned at the right time. But some people don't like it and they'll sue. So that's a conundrum.
We're speaking with Jim Carlton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. He lives in San Francisco, is based there. His piece is called Why Wildfires Are So Bad This Year in California, Oregon, and Washington. So I know California is often the focus here because it's such a huge state. But Oregon and Washington facing the similar type problems with the wind and dry air?
Well, yeah, and Gordon, this is the really strange thing that I've never seen in all my years of being in California. We had a wind event, basically 700 miles long, these winds of 50 to 60 miles an hour. They fueled fires in southern Oregon that, you know, one swept from Ashland, Oregon into Medford, wiped out two towns. There's a firestorm coming towards Portland. I mean, nobody's saying it's going to hit Portland, but it could, you know, definitely reach some of the suburbs. And it started at the top of the you know, the crest of the Cascades all the way down. One fire in Northern California grew 200,000 acres in one day. That's an unprecedented rate of growth of wildfires. And that's why, you know, the scientists are worried this could be evidence of climate change. We've never seen fires that have grown that fast. And that's what's so scary.
There was somebody in your story, and I'm paraphrasing here, who said something along the lines of, if the Prince of Darkness were to design an end-of-world scenario, this might be it. I mean, that's how serious this is.
Yes, Wally Covington with Northern Arizona University, and he said, yeah, this is, I mean, the Prince of Darkness couldn't have come up with a better scenario. I guess when they're doing disaster movies in the future, maybe this is kind of a real-world scenario. They can just put all this in the soup, you know?
You know, as a distant observer in New Jersey, where I can't relate to what's happening, sometimes I think, well, you know, just wait to winter and things will be better. But I presume this scenario could pop up again next year.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's really the problem. There's just so much fuel. And we went through a five-year drought, ended in 2017. It was the worst on record. It was, you know, by tree ring studies, it could have been the worst in the hundreds of years. And so the vegetation and soil is still very moisture deprived. And so with the rising temperatures, even if we get like a really wet year, what that can do is, you know, create more growth to burn, more fuel to burn. And so it's kind of a catch-22 situation we've got here.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Carlton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, based in San Francisco. The hunt is on for a gunman who shot two sheriff's deputies in Los Angeles County. Both are hospitalized with critical injuries. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The deputies were shot Saturday night while sitting in their parked patrol vehicle in Compton. The wounded cops, a 31-year-old female and a 24-year-old male, had been sworn into their jobs 14 months ago. The sheriff's department said on Twitter yesterday that protesters had blocked the entrance to the medical center's emergency room and shouted, "We hope they die." The sheriff's department posted video of the ambush shooting on Twitter. LA County is offering a $100,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the gunman. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Officials say the gunman walked past the passenger side of the patrol car shortly before 7 p.m., then turned around and fired several rounds from a pistol into the vehicle. He then fled on foot, last seen heading north in a black four-door sedan. 14 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. Tropical Storm Sally is forecast to strengthen into a hurricane as it targets the Gulf Coast today. It's forecast to bring life-threatening storm surge, hurricane winds, and torrential rain. The storm's track had a notable shift eastward late yesterday, increasing the odds of a more significant impact on the Mississippi coast and potentially lowering the impacts on southeastern Louisiana, including New Orleans. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards says the region, though, is still drying out from Hurricane Laura.
When the ground is saturated, it doesn't take as much wind to actually blow a tree over into the power lines and all of that sort of stuff.
The storm is expected to near the southeastern Louisiana or southern Mississippi coast by late today, possibly reaching land as a strong Category 1 or possibly low-end Category 2 hurricane. Heavy rain fell on the eastern side of Sally, especially from the Florida Keys to Sarasota. Key West recorded nearly 4 inches of rain in just 1 hour overnight, causing flash flooding there. Flood watches have been issued for a large part of the southeast. This portion of the program is brought to you by Harry's. Every time a new smartphone comes out, there's a better camera, right? A bigger screen, and of course, a larger price tag, just like everything else. Well, the guys at Harry's have always looked at things a little differently. And now that they found a way to make their blades even sharper, they're bucking the trend again by keeping the price the same, as low as $2 each. When I got my first set of the new blades, I was blown away at how smooth my shave was, and it's not like I had any complaints before. When other razor companies do just about anything, even change the color of their package, it seems like the price goes up. But Harry's sharper blades are a real innovation, and they're not charging a penny extra. Harry's right now has a terrific offer for listeners of our show. New customers get $5 off a trial set from Harry's with the code DEAL at harrys.com. That's H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com. It includes a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and travel cover, all for just $3. Plus, they ship it to you for free. Don't forget to use the code DEAL at checkout and give Harry's sharper blades a try. That's harrys.com, and at checkout, use the code DEAL. 20 minutes after the hour on this morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The National Weather Service has issued a red flag warning for areas of the West Coast as high winds threaten to spread devastating wildfires still farther. Gusts of up to 40 miles per hour are expected in parts of southern Oregon with no rain. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley spoke with ABC.
It is apocalyptic. I drove 600 miles up and down the state. I never escaped the smoke.
Fires have been raging for 3 weeks in Oregon, California, and Washington. Tens of thousands of people have had to flee. At least 35 have died.
Number two.
In open defiance of state regulation and his own administration's pandemic health guidelines, President Trump yesterday hosted his first indoor rally since June, telling a packed, nearly maskless crowd in Henderson, Nevada, that the nation is making the last turn in defeating the virus.
51 days from now, we're going to win Nevada, and we're going to win 4 more years in the White House. And after we win 4 more years, we'll ask for maybe another 4 or so.
Not since a rally in Tulsa that was blamed for a surge of coronavirus infections has Trump gathered supporters indoors.
Number three.
The number of daily coronavirus infections worldwide reached a new record yesterday with 307,930 new confirmed infections. More than 5,500 new deaths were also reported. The biggest increases in infections reported in India, the U.S., and Brazil. Meanwhile, Israel has become the first country to announce it will reimpose a second nationwide lockdown later this week. The U.S. ambassador to China is apparently being replaced. Initial word on the move involving Terry Branstad came in overnight tweets from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, but there was no immediate word on why. The move comes at a time of rising tensions between the two superpowers on a number of fronts.
First down, handoff, Kamara running Hill's way at the two at the one. Kamara, his second touchdown of the game. And look who was throwing the block for him. Taysom Hill lined up in a tight end spot on the far right side. Kamara went his way. 6-yard touchdown run.
The call on Compass Media Network says Alvin Kamara and the Saints ruin the much-anticipated debut of Tom Brady in a Tampa Bay Bucs uniform. The Saints beat the Bucs in the Superdome 34-23. At 43, the NFL's oldest active player looked the part at times. He was sacked 3 times and threw as many picks as touchdowns, too.
You can't say that about Brady. Brady's untouchable. By the way, did Taysom Hill make the play-by-play call also? Because it seems he does everything for the Saints. Taysom Hill in the booth as well. Throwing the block. Thanks, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour. Coming up next, what outdoor classrooms look like these days. Being apart makes us want to do things together. It's what we miss about our friends, family, and yeah, even coworkers. From birthdays in the break room to all of us pitching in, like for a gift or a good cause, we're driven to be there for people. It runs pretty deep. These days, we're finding that our normal has changed, and we need to find new ways to connect and support one another. With the PayPal app, sending and receiving money is faster and easier than it's ever been. The past few months, in my family, we've used PayPal for focusing on locally owned small businesses in town, like our favorite pizza and burger joints, or sending our son care packages in college, even sending the occasional I miss you gift card to mom. With PayPal, it's easy to quickly and securely send money to friends and family, donate to causes, buy online, or even make touch-free QR payments in person at local businesses. See for yourself how PayPal is making it easy to pay safely, quickly, and easily. Download the PayPal app today. Terms and conditions apply. Thanks for being with us. Is your kid attending outdoor classes as part of in-person learning this fall? The CDC recommends that schools consider using outdoor space, weather permitting, to enable social distancing. Some schools have erected pretty elaborate structures. More from Elizabeth Buchwald, reporter at MarketWatch. Elizabeth, what have you found?
I found a lot of different things. So, yeah, as the title of my story reads, there are these huge tents literally fit for an outdoor wedding, beautiful canopies made from wood, and then there are a lot more simpler designs where it's just benches outside type of a thing, but it varies across the board.
Some of them look like camping structures, too. Pretty fancy.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing anything to get the kids outside, and if you're going to have a camping structure, it kind of looks more inviting for children as opposed to just sitting on the grass, and I think a lot of schools are implementing this as a long-term plan, so that's why they're really going all out.
What about the additional cost here for some of these things?
Mm-hmm. That's been a very big issue because it obviously is safer to be outside. We've known that throughout the virus, so schools are saying it's definitely safer to learn outside, too, but the issue is not all schools have the funds. So if you don't have a well-funded PTA, parent-teacher association, you're going to run into some issues. And one of the parents I spoke to, she led an incredible initiative where she got two grants from a New York City, two different New York City nonprofits. But another school I spoke to, it wouldn't make sense for them to do it because of the needs that their children have. But she said, we have no PTA, and there are lots of schools like us that don't have a PTA. It just would be, the cost would be way too high.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Buchwald, reporter at MarketWatch. Her piece is called Tents Fit for a Wedding Reception and Artfully Constructed Wooden Bandstands. Welcome to Outdoor Classrooms During a Pandemic. What about the risks here? You referenced special needs students, those who are autistic as well.
Yeah, so the teacher that I spoke to, she's a special education science teacher at an elementary school in the city, and she was saying just the thought of teaching outside makes her so anxious because she has students that will run out of the classroom, and when you're bound by walls, that's not such a big deal if they run over to the next room to grab a doll, but she said if we're teaching outside and they start running, that's just the worst scenario she could think of in her head. And also children she teaches are very prone to just putting anything in their mouths. So again, inside you can kind of control the objects that are within the building, but outside it's a whole different territory.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Buchwald, reporter at MarketWatch. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. This is a special end-of-summer announcement from Dell. At our Labor Day sale, small businesses can save up to 50% on select business computers with Intel Core processors. We're committed to taking your business to the next level. Give our small business technology advisors a call. They'll identify the right tech solution for your business with Labor Day savings. Visit Dell.com/businessdeals or call us at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
When it comes to mobility, Michigan is making what the rest of the world hasn't even thought of yet. Our state is home to two world-class autonomous vehicle testing sites, and we're first in the U.S. for mobility-related patents. With over 500 miles of roadway equipped for connected vehicle testing, it's no wonder that everyone is moving to where it all started. So if you're ready to move into the future with your mobility business, visit planetm.com/pure-opportunity.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday, September 14. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The death toll climbs to 35 from western wildfires. The Gulf Coast braces for Tropical Storm Sally. Two Los Angeles sheriff's deputies reportedly out of surgery after being ambushed by a gunman Saturday night. AstraZeneca resumes COVID vaccine trials in the UK. Amazon earlier today said it's hiring 100,000 people in the U.S. and Canada. Oracle has reportedly beaten out Microsoft for the U.S. operations of TikTok. And social media helps a mom desperate to appease her autistic daughter. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. With so much uncertainty when doing business during a pandemic, resiliency is critical to the survival of a company, even if it's been around for decades. So how can you build a resilient business to withstand the unknown? Insight from Rebecca Meyer, partner and senior consultant at Relative Solutions, a firm that works with family enterprises. Rebecca, what do you recommend?
this is certainly a time where having resilience as a family business would not be a bad thing at all to have. We define resilience as the ability to meet a challenge and get stronger from the effort. So I think, you know, for families right now, the main thing that they need to be able to do is, you know, work together to overcome the challenges that they face. And that's not an easy task when you're not only a family, but a family that has, your shared economy together. So that have a lot more complexity to making decisions.
I get the sense that so many are in survival mode, not necessarily resiliency mode. Is that fair?
Well, I think resiliency is a way that helps you be survive. If you think about anybody who faces a big challenge, it's the ability to basically be able to think, decide, and act, or not be overwhelmed when things go upside down, essentially.
Is that part of like a planning process that takes place well in advance, or is that something that happens on the fly, say when a pandemic strikes?
Yeah, well, it's always better to do planning ahead of time. I think we know that, but people say, is it the plan? Like, is it the plan? And it's really you said it exactly right. It's the planning, the process of really learning to talk about business together, figure out people's different strengths and skills, learning how to manage differences and make decisions, how people think about risk differently, to be clear about what your shared purpose is. And that's, the book that our colleague Freda Hirst Brown wrote. It's called The Essential Roadmap: Navigating Family Enterprise Sustainability in a Changing World, written well before the world changed quite so much, is really all about this. How do you have in place the skill sets and the plans and the processes that allow you to deal with these kind of curveballs?
We're speaking with Rebecca Meyer, partner and senior consultant with a firm called Relative Solutions, a family enterprise consulting firm. We're talking about how to build a resilient business. Can you build a resilient business, say, once a crisis is underway, like the pandemic?
Sure. I mean, there's no question that you can begin to learn those skills, now. But it's certainly easier when people's emotions are a little bit less high, when the stakes are a little lower. But of course, you can always begin to become more resilient.
What would step one be if a family decided, boy, we're getting clobbered by the pandemic, we need a new plan of action? What would step one be?
Well, I always think that leadership is really essential in these kind of situations. I think what you're saying, what do we do now? That's a leader who's going to step up and do that. And so I think some of the qualities of leadership that are really important, being able to listen to everyone, in the family. We all have a tendency that somebody in our family that we want to ignore or avoid, that's the person you especially need to listen to right now. Having a sense of what we call the FQ, or the family intelligence, knowing your family history, your family dynamics, your role in the system, how your family works, being able to delegate and to know when to seek advice, be able to take decisive action, to take care of yourself, and then to communicate. So I think these kind of leadership qualities, which are not just, of course, the one leader who's running things, mm-hmm. but really everybody in the family needs to have, some of these. That's what really makes a family be able to pull their resilience up in a situation like we're facing now.
Have we seen a lot of analysis paralysis the past couple of months?
There are those who do, who have a difficult time choosing which way to go. But I would say, most of the families that we work with, they're used to dealing with ups and downs. This is not their first rodeo, and they're able to have the conversations that allow them to make a decision.
Thanks, Rebecca. That is Rebecca Meyer, partner and senior consultant at Relative Solutions. 20 minutes now in front of the hour. Time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, you know, we're always on the lookout for those dream jobs where we get paid to do things that we're either doing anyway or aspire to spend our days doing. This would seem to fall into that category, at least for the two people in this room, though admittedly it would probably have to be a part-time gig. According to UPI, a gambling website called BonusFinder.com based in Amsterdam is seeking a cheeseburger taster to go on a quest to find the best burger in the U.S. The winner will receive $500 as well as funds for travel and to purchase the cheeseburgers for tasting and reviewing. The burgers will be graded on several criteria, including patty texture, patty seasoning, bun softness, bun taste, complexity of flavors used, relish and or sauce taste, cheese flavor and creaminess, value for your money, and quality of the ingredients. The company said the randomly selected winner will be announced on October 9th. I'm not exactly sure why BonusFinder.com is the one who's putting this out there. Right. If I had gotten this in my email, that's, you know, I would say it was spam. I would probably report it as phishing if I got this solicitation in my email. So I'm not exactly sure what the motivation behind this is.
I thought the same thing. It's a kind of bizarre tie-up, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, we'll see.
But sure.
This seems fun, even... if you weren't to be paid for it.
Well, yes.
Like just a couple of friends or the couples that you're friendly with, like rent an RV for, I don't know, like a summer, you know, if you're retired or rich or whatever, just travel the country looking for the best burger.
Right. Forget the $500. Just let me free me for my day job and I'll go and taste burgers.
Make
for the
social
summer.
Media posts or whatever, vlog. Yeah, it would be fun.
Yes,
it would definitely be fun.
I would agree. And good news for those who like to wear their pants low or maybe just forgot to put on their belt when they left the house. After 13 years, a South Florida city has overturned a ban on saggy pants, the kind that revealed the wearer's underwear. The Apalaca City Commission voted last week to repeal both the original 2007 legislation and a 2013 ordinance that said women, not just men, could receive civil citations for wearing pants that expose their undergarments. The Miami Herald reports that the vote was a first reading of the repeal, meaning it will need to be approved again at a subsequent commission meeting before it's official. Around the city, which is northeast of Miami, signs still warn folks of the ordinance. They show an image of two young men wearing pants below their waists and feature the words, "No ifs, ends, or buts. It's the city law."
Ha ha, very clever.
That's a bit of money they spent there to put up those signs and,
right.
and enforce that law. Maybe that's why. Maybe it's just another one of those laws that's kind of difficult to enforce.
Yeah.
Or, you know, kind of almost embarrassing to enforce.
Yeah.
You know, officers who are busy doing other things, more important things, that have to spend their day writing citations for people who have saggy pants.
Other than enforcing fashion law.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah, I don't know if this is something that's a high priority these days.
I never quite understood that look.
Right. Yes.
Well, it was puzzling.
Right. We understand. Yes. That is true.
Well, I'm old. You're not as old.
No, I'm definitely in that same category. But yeah, never understood that myself. Certainly never attempted it myself.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, should it be a fine? Should it be something that the police need to worry about?
Right.
Probably not.
Right. When you start attaching a fine to something, it quickly gets my attention.
But, yeah.
I don't need to be fined for anything.
Right.
So I'll keep my pants up.
Yes.
By the way, here's a list of people who've been hired after walking into a job with their pants half down. Yeah, I think you know what I mean. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, travel strategies for the holidays. Did you know that right now, GEICO is offering an extra 15% credit on car, motorcycle, and RV policies? That's 15% on top of what GEICO could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Visit geico.com to learn more. We've heard for years that it's important to have a diversified portfolio, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, that kind of thing. But if you've ever looked at a breakdown of the most successful portfolios, you'll typically see real estate. So why isn't it one of the first asset classes you consider when you're looking to diversify? Well, simple. It hasn't been available to investors like you and me until now, thanks to Fundrise. Whether you're new to real estate investing or a veteran, Fundrise can help. Fundrise is an investing platform that makes investing in high quality, high potential real estate as easy as investing in your favorite stock or mutual fund. Fundrise manages more than $1 billion in assets for more than 130,000 investors with a team of real estate professionals that carefully vets real estate projects. Start building your better portfolio today. Get started at fundrise.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days of advisory fees waived. That's FUNDRISE.com/Gordon to have your first 90 days days of advisory fees waived. Fundrise.com/Gordon. Thanks for joining us. It's time to start thinking about holiday travel, perhaps. The COVID-19 pandemic has thrown so many wrenches in so many plans that it's hard to know what will happen next month, never mind in December. NerdWallet, though, has four ways to book holiday travel without locking yourself into a policy that could cause you to lose money. Number one, avoid budget airlines. As of last month, all the full-fare airlines in the U.S. are offering flexible change and cancellation policies. Number two, choose your lodging carefully. Currently, only a few hotels offer generous blanket change or cancellation policies for all travel through December, including Hilton, Hyatt, and Radisson. Number three, don't rely on travel insurance. Whatever's happening with the pandemic is unlikely to qualify as an unforeseeable event and therefore unlikely to be covered by a travel insurance policy. And finally, you might not need to book holiday travel just yet. Usually, though, airfare prices creep up during the fall till they spike by November, but 2020 is not usually. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Firefighters in California have been battling multiple fires throughout the state for nearly a month as hot, dry weather has fueled flames and created tinderbox conditions. Cal Fire says more than 16,700 firefighters are battling 29 wildfires. Fires are also burning in Oregon and Washington. Washington Governor Jay Inslee on ABC.
We need to act, and we need to act now. And these people whose homes were destroyed that I've seen with their tears in the last few days, they deserve action against climate change.
Record-breaking temperatures and a lack of rain have exacerbated conditions. At least 35 people have died.
Number two.
Tropical storm Sally is forecast to strengthen into a hurricane as it approaches the Gulf Coast. The storm's track had a notable shift eastward late Sunday, increasing the odds of a more significant impact on the Mississippi coast, Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves.
There is the potential of as much as 15 to 20 inches of rain hitting our state.
The storm's expected to strike the coast as a strong Category 1 or possibly low-end Category 2 hurricane.
Number three.
President Trump held his first indoor rally in nearly 3 months yesterday, ignoring Nevada's distancing rules. The rally was held in a warehouse in Henderson. Hundreds of the president's supporters attended the event, violating state rules banning gatherings of more than 50 people that were put in place to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. Governor Steve Sisolak called Trump's decision to hold the rally reckless and selfish. Two Los Angeles sheriff's deputies are in critical condition after being ambushed Saturday night when a gunman walked up to the passenger side of their patrol car and fired, shooting both officers. Video released by the sheriff's department shows the suspect running away after firing several rounds into the car, the suspect still at large. At a U.S. Open unlike any other, Dominic Thiem constructed a comeback the likes of which hadn't been seen in 71 years. After dropping the opening two sets against Alexander Zverev at the nearly empty Arthur Ashe Stadium, Thiem turned things around for a five-set victory across more than 4 hours to earn his first slam. Thiem, the first man to win the Open after trailing by two sets, it was also the first championship decided by a fifth-set tiebreaker.
Marathon that was.
And if they had been at Wimbledon, this might still be going on without the tiebreak.
What about Djokovic? Does he
actually
win it if he stayed
in? They do have that. No. Well, who cares?
Okay.
Who cares?
I think that's fair. There's no asterisk needed next to his name.
Nope. These guys are what a great match.
U.S. Open champ. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Coming up next, the Massachusetts mom, whose desperate pleas were answered by social media.
Dell supports America's entrepreneurs during Small Business Month with all you need to office anywhere. Save up to 45% on computers and servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Plus, save on top-brand tech while enjoying free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the tech that's just right. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/smallbusinessdeals.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Glad you're with us. A mom in Massachusetts is grateful after those within and beyond the local community helped her search for SpaghettiOs. The canned pasta is the only food her autistic daughter will eat lately, and it's been in short supply. While many families, of course, went wild buying toilet paper, Crystal McDonald stocked up on SpaghettiOs. Her daughter, Ashlyn, has autism and is mostly nonverbal. The Today Show says the 11-year-old has only wanted to eat SpaghettiOs with meatballs since the pandemic upended her traditional routines. After calling or visiting 20 supermarkets a day, she eventually took her search to social media. Her mission was met with an outpouring of support. The family's received over 100 cans with more on the way. And Campbell's Soup Company caught wind of the family story and will be sending the McDonald's a year's supply of Ashlyn's favorite SpaghettiOs with meatballs. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.